We will continue down the agenda. Number 23, Aquatic Invasive Species Operational Efforts Update. We have Jake Davis joining us virtually, so we'll allow him to hop on. And Jake, if you can hear me and you're ready, go ahead and begin when you're ready.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. Let me share my screen and we will be off and running. Hopefully everybody can see that all right.
Yes. Yep, we're good to go.
Yep. Excellent. Well, thank you very much. Again, this morning, Jake Davis, Fisheries Program Administrator. I'll be giving a brief update on the Department's Aquatic Invasive Species Program. I've shared a number of these updates over the last several months, but this one's more focused on the ground operations as we are in our boating season and our AIS program is underway. So just give a brief outline of what I'll be covering this morning. I want to talk about our guiding documents for this program for the year 2023. Additionally, communication, that's a huge part of our program, outreach education. Really want to touch on staffing. That's something we discussed a lot between last year and this year and some of the struggles that we had last year and some of the things we did differently this year. Also want to touch on our watercraft inspections and enforcement and provide some numbers as far as how far we are along this year and what we've seen for numbers. Our GFP fisheries activity, we certainly have a lot of staff that have been in the field for a month and a half or more conducting fisheries management activities and just kind of describe some of the efforts that we take to make sure that we don't contribute to the spread of AIS with our standard management activities. Also touch on some of the research that's ongoing within the state regarding aquatic invasive species and the ways that the department is approaching that. And then also partnerships, which is a huge part of what we do and keep our program moving forward. So our guiding documents, the first thing that we would refer to is our AIS strategic plan. Now, this document was put together and adopted by this commission in January of 2023. It's got a lot of moving pieces. And additionally, within this plan, we have several other subplans, if you will. The first one is going to be our workforce recruitment plan. Now, this was a plan that was put together last fall in response to some of our issues hiring seasonal and intern staff last year to fill aquatic invasive species positions. We were really operating at around a 50% workforce capacity in a lot of cases. And additionally, in some of our areas, such as the Northeast, where we were trying to hire for a specific water-based crew, we weren't actually even able to get any applicants. We wanted to address that specifically, put something together to help us really work for towards hiring all of our advertised positions. Additionally, we have our rapid response plan. This plan was put together to be in place in the case that we documented a new zebra quagga mussel infestation. The idea is that it dictates a series of activities taken by the department within a matter of days of a new infestation. A lot of this is going to be related to communication and signage at the specific water body. Additionally, we have our 2023 AS communication plan. This is a plan that's put together on an annual basis. The reason that we do an annual communication plan is we want to be responsive to a changing communication environment, if you will. There's constantly evolving ways to reach members of the public. When you look at social media, whatever it might be, we want to make sure that we incorporate that into every year's communication plan. And so that's why this plan is updated on an annual basis. And additionally, our operational plan. Similar to the communication plan, there's new methodologies, new information, new research that comes out on an annual basis. And we want to be able to capture that within an operational plan every year. So this plan, again, is being operational. It's really going to dictate what our program looks like on the ground, in the field with our staff members. So these are the documents that we use for basically guiding documents for this year. These are available on our website as well as sdleastwanted.com, or excuse me, sdleastwanted.sd.gov. Now, just to cover our AIS communication plan, we really think outreach and education is our primary focus and the primary tool we have in our toolbox. The reason for this is we're very fortunate to have a lot of resources, a lot of ways for the public to reach the water, but what that means is we can't be everywhere all the time. So with that, our hope is to provide every surface water user of the state with the right information, the necessary tools that they need to implement the best management practices every time they use the water. It really is coming down to the user every time they use the water. So we want to make sure that they have the right information when they do that. And so outreach and education is a big part of that. Our plan this year, again, is going to use a variety of media platforms, social media, emails, number of different ways, but the message is going to be consistent. Clean, drain, dry. Those three words can really have a large impact on slowing the spread of AIS in South Dakota. Additionally, those three words apply to every aquatic invasive species that we have. So even though zebra mussels might be getting a lot of attention, if you follow clean, drain, dry, it will work for all of the AIS that are in South Dakota or in the surrounding area. One thing we did a little different this year was we had our first AIS Awareness Week. This was May 22nd to May 28th. Within this week, our communication staff did a great job of providing content that was specific to our users and aquatic invasive species as we were gearing up towards Memorial Day. So this consisted of dedicated emails, additionally some information in Summer Parks newsletter. And then if anybody had I hope everybody's seen it, there's a video put together basically letting users know that our watercraft inspection stations are out there and they're more likely to run into than a Sasquatch. So again, it's just another way to try and engage users. The previous couple of years, we worked with Benny Spies to put together some informational videos. And this year, we had Sasquatch make an appearance again. So hopefully, everybody had a chance to view this video. A really nice job of reaching out to the users, reminding them that inspection stations are in operation right now. Now, I mentioned last year, staffing was an issue for us. Some of our cases, we didn't have any applicants for some of the crews in different parts of the state. So we're really focused on filling the advertised positions that we have for this year. And I'm happy to say that we did really well in our opinion. We're really functioning pretty well. As far as game fish and parks, we have two seasonal supervisors, one located in Western South Dakota, one located in Eastern South Dakota. Now, the primary role of these supervisors is to help coordinate day-to-day schedules of watercraft inspection stations in their respective areas, as well as deal with local entities. So, for example, in the western portion of the state, that seasonal supervisor is going to be the direct liaison with our county conservation district partners. And on the eastern side, that individual is going to work with some of our water districts as well as our lake associations. So they really help us to be liaisons for our department and those other entities. The seasonal supervisor in Eastern South Dakota was one that we weren't able to get filled last year. So we're very fortunate to have it filled this year to really help with the workload in that part of the state. Additionally, we approached hiring interns a little differently than we have in the past. This year we had, if you consider it an intern pool, where we hire around 40 fisheries management interns across the state. They essentially are going to do a hybrid schedule between fisheries management or hatchery related activities and aquatic invasive species watercraft inspections. And so for us, we're able to staff all the crews that we were hoping to this year. Initially, we're in a much better spot in law enforcement. Last year, I believe on July 1st, we were down 20 duty stations. And so that impacts the amount of law enforcement that we can have in the field, whether it's AIS or any other enforcement. This year, I believe we're down to a handful. So again, really in a better place as far as staffing goes within game fish and parks. As far as our county conservation district partners in the West, we did partner with them even more this year as far as advertising positions to help spread the word on what opportunities existed in those specific areas. And we're in pretty good shape there. There are still a few open positions. For example, Shade Hill Reservoir in Perkins County. We have 3 staff on. We'd like to have 4. Same with Pactola Reservoir. We have 7 staff on. We'd like to have 8. And then Angostura, we have 8. We'd like to have 12 if possible for full coverage. That being said, even with a few vacancies right now, we've got more staff hired in 2023 than in 2022. And again, this all plays into what kind of presence we can have in the field with our inspections. Now, as far as the numbers themselves, watercraft inspections, let me talk about the crews first. So the way that we have it, our program laid out, it's similar to what we've had in the past. On the eastern side of South Dakota, we have roadside crews. What this means is they're going to set up on thoroughfares between water bodies, whether that's interstates or highways, and any watercraft that's passing by needs to stop. The reason that we do this is because of the high volume of access points. It makes more sense to us to maximize contacts by catching those thoroughfares. And this can be, again, Interstate 29, Interstate 90, any of the highways around Webster, and they do rotate through those stations. We also have a roving crew this year. This is one that we advertised last year, didn't have any applicants. We were able to fill this crew this year. The idea is that they bounce around Eastern South Dakota. They can be responsive to hot bites. They've already visited a half dozen lakes so far this year. And the idea is that, again, they're a little bit more of a responsive unit to angler use or recreational use. In Central South Dakota, we have one crew. Again, this is primarily road-based along the Missouri River. But this year, they did do some limited access-based work, such as West Bend Ramp, where we know there's going to be a lot of users because of a hot bite situation. So in this case here, again, a little bit different approach than we did last year, but primarily looking at roadside inspections on major thoroughfares. And then in Western South Dakota, these ones are access-based. The primary reason is the limited number of water and access areas at the large reservoirs in Western South Dakota. We have six large reservoirs. So with that, we can focus more on access-based just because they are very spread out and a lot fewer access areas. On any day, we hope to have around 9 stations that are functioning at these 6 reservoirs. A lot just depends on available staff. But in general, we anticipate and have seen 9 stations running every day in Western South Dakota. Now, as far as the numbers that we've seen, and these numbers were pulled as of June 5th of this year, our inspections started prior to Memorial Day. Training started around the second week of May. Primary reason for that is that's when a lot of our inspectors were available. A lot of them are college students, and so we waited till that spring semester was over. So once that happened, training started across the state. Our aquatic invasive species coordinator, Tanner Davis, hit the road for about 3 weeks and trained staff all across the state. So what have we seen so far? Right now, as of June 5th, we had just under 3,000 watercraft inspections. Now, for comparison, we had just under 2,400 last year at the same time. So we are trending in a positive direction as far as numbers compared to last year. And a lot of that, again, is due to the staffing being in a much better place than last year. We have conducted 34 decontaminations. I do want to mention that these are not always full decontaminations. Sometimes they might be standing water where a plug wasn't pulled, or even a plant decon where simply a trailer came out of the water and there's a plant on it. It is documented as a decontamination, but it doesn't always mean that there was, say, a zebra mussel attached to these watercraft. And as far as law enforcement, 55 citations have been written so far, along with 43 warnings. Now, one thing I did want to touch on, our staff has been in the field since April, even with the late spring. Staff was in the field in April, starting to assess winter kills, conduct trap and transfer efforts, as well as walleye spawning. One of the things we want to make sure that we're doing when we're raising, stocking fish, collecting walleye eggs, any field work, lake management, we want to make sure that we're not spreading AIS with those activities, because we're essentially encountering a lot of water bodies throughout the year. And so what our staff has done is utilize developed protocols. We have hatchery protocols to make sure that any product leaving the hatchery doesn't have any AIS included. There's a chemical bath, if you will, that we can put fish in when we're transferring from one water body to the next, to make sure that they're not there's no AIS in that water when we're dumping those fish. And same when we've got gear sitting in one system and then taking it to another, we have sampling protocols as far as decontaminations to make sure that we're not out there spreading AIS, because again, our staff does put in to a lot of different water bodies across the state on any given field season. Additionally, one thing that we're doing this summer that we have done for many years is lake management surveys. And so staff goes out, collects fisheries data on water bodies all across the state. I believe we have around 150 surveys planned for this year. The idea is that this information is used for our long-term data sets. And it was long before AIS was a discussion point. But what it does for us is it allows us to build this annual information in the long-term trends and then look and see what happens after, say, an infestation. And so, for example, I have here is Lake Sharp on Missouri River. walleye populations. The idea is that staff goes out, collects them with gill nets. You can get an idea on how long a fish is and how old it is, and we can track that through time. And so in this case here in Lake Sharp, it goes back to 2005. It's broken out by age 2, 4, and age 6 walleye. And then you see the dashed vertical line. That's where zebra mussels were first detected in that water body. And so what we can do is start looking at, has growth changed? Has length at age changed since this infestation? Because that's certainly a question that we get a lot. And so what we see here is that it really doesn't appear to have any effect on our length at age so far walleye with that detection. Now, that being said, we continue to monitor it, and that happens all across the state on any of our infested or non-infested water bodies. That's just some of our ways that we can use our standard survey data to evaluate any potential changes as a result of an infestation. Now, to talk about some of our AIS detection and monitoring efforts, we certainly want to know where our AIS species are at, what their distributions are, and if they're changing. So the ways that we can do this is that we've worked some additional AIS surveying into our standard work activities, as well as reports from the public. And so we've encountered AIS or heard about AIS through both of these different avenues, if you will. Excuse me. So for our staff, what we ask them to do when they go out and conduct a standard lake survey, we want them to conduct an AIS survey with that. So far, our staff has conducted around 40 surveys, and the goal again this year by the end of summer is that we've conducted around 150 if staff are able to get to all those different water bodies. But it's just a little extra work, but the idea is that when they're conducting a standard lake survey, they're already on that water body. Just take a little extra time, conduct a few extra methodologies, and look for some AIS while you're out there. And then for the members of the public, we have citizen monitoring. The idea is that if you go on sdleastwanted.sd.gov, there's a portal there. You can watch some information on ways to sample for AIS. And then additionally, you can report information that you find or don't find at a given water body. We provided some settler devices where zebra mussels might attach to the lake associations. So individuals there could hang something off their dock and then provide information throughout the summer through that citizen monitoring portal. And again, they're a big one that can help us out. We've worked, we've contacted around 32 lake associations across the state and handed out settler samples to a number of them. Additionally, any member of the public can use this citizen monitor. It doesn't have to just be a lake association, but that's the avenue for a member of the public to report something on AIS to the department. And one big thing so far, it's still early, but as of right now, we have not documented any new infestations in 2023. I just want to briefly touch on some AIS research that's going on in the state. A lot of it's going to be focused on invasive carp in the southeast, but we have some projects that are working with SDSU and USD looking at movement and also ways that they might get into some of the, different ways that people might move them around or how they're working within the systems that they are currently in within South Dakota. But just wanted to touch on some of the research that's happening. We did hear about some couple months ago at a commission meeting by BJ Shawl in the Southeast. So again, just letting folks know that we are working on some of these species in South Dakota and then also use research that occurs outside of the state as well. And then just want to touch on partnerships real quick, because this is a huge part of what we do. It really involves any surface water of the state or user of the state. So with that, we're open to any partnership that we can. The sign here that you see here is actually a partnership with the Ponset Lake Association. So there's 9 of these signs that were placed this spring around Lake Ponset, some other neighboring water bodies. The idea is just to make it very evident for users in that area to stop there, clean, drain, dry. And again, this was a great partnership with the Ponset Lake Association. We work with some of our state agency partners. DOT has been fantastic as far as helping us install signage. We've used some of their interstate signs over the years as well on, say, high traffic weekends like 4th of July that say clean, drain, dry, or pull your plug. Department of Revenue, they've helped us distribute AIS material with boat registrations. So again, ways that we can reach any watercraft user in the state, tourism and Department of Public Safety, spread information, help us with roadside inspections and permissions that way. So our state agency partners have been great. Really work with lake associations that are interested, and also South Dakota Lakes and Streams Association. So again, passionate users that are located in the state that are helping spread the word, and other activities as well. And then a lot of other federal partners that we have, Bureau of Reclamation, U.S. Forest Service, allowing inspection sites on their lands that they control, county conservation districts, of course, with helping to hire staff and administering the EIS program in Western South Dakota, and then water development districts. West Dakota Water Development District has provided funds for watercraft inspections in Pennington County. So again, some really good partnerships, and then a number of NGOs that are out there. So for us, again, because it does impact a lot of surface water users, that are a lot of different entities out there that are willing to help us spread the word of clean, drain, dry. And so just real quick, just want to have a couple summaries points here, talking about our 2023 season. Our communication plan, again, is going to be that really driver of it, because we do feel that outreach and education is our best tool in the toolbox to try and reach every surface water user of the state. Again, inspections are fine, but we can't be everywhere all the time. And so we really want to provide users with the tools that they can put into place every time they use a surface water. That being said, inspection stations are operating. Our goal is to operate them as long as we can, the primary boating season to Labor Day and even longer. Last year, we operated inspection stations into October in certain locations when we had staff available. And then the big one so far, no new infestations in 2023. It's still early in the year. That being said, we've got monitoring efforts in place. And at this point, right now, we have not documented anything new. So with that, a lot of information, I'll be happy to take any questions, though, if there are any.
Very good. Thank you, Jake. Any questions from members of the commission?
Madam Chair. Commissioner White here. At this point, how many lakes, Jake, do we have that are infested with these species that are known in South Dakota? Yep.
Through the chair?
Yes.
So currently, Commissioner, we have 15 that are infested with zebra mussels, but when we look at all aquatic invasive species, which includes plants, invertebrates, and fish, we're around four dozen, I believe. It's around 46 somewhere in there. And that's what we are aware of.
Follow up?
Yes.
Then are we given extra consideration then for boats leaving these bodies of water that are infected, so that we have confidence that there isn't going to be that species carried forward, or are they just going a general inspection process?
Through the chair. So, Commissioner White, so when we are conducting a lot of our surveys, our inspections, the roadside ones in particular, that's whether they're going to enter or exiting a water body. And with the idea that plugs need to be pulled clean, drained, dry, whether you're leaving or entering a water body, that there shouldn't be any AIS there. Now, when we look at some of our access-based programs, though, if a lake is, say, negative for zebra mussels, we are going to be conducting an entrance inspection. So as a watercraft is going there, if it's positive, it's going to be an exit inspection where watercraft is leaving. Now, in some cases, if we have time, we will conduct both exit and entrance inspections. It's just kind of specific to how much use there is for the day. But again, with that message of clean, drain, dry, the hope is that every watercraft, whether it's going to a water body, it's going there clean, drain, dry, or when it's leaving, the user gets it to clean, drain, dry, so that the next time it hits a water body, there isn't any chance of moving AIS.
Excellent. And I think the fact there hasn't been any new outbreaks in 23 gives some credence to what your efforts have been. So thank you.
Commissioner Beast.
Yeah, Jake, Commissioner Beast here. Down the road, do you see where we, when the mussels get so much in a lake and they eat off all the algae and stuff, where their population drops because the water's too clean for them all to survive? Do you see that happening? And then after that, if that does, or our infestation drops off, do you see us just going to an educational with our fishermen, or do you think we'll always be doing these inspections?
Through the chair.
Yes.
Commissioner Beast, so the first question, as far as zebra mussels getting to a point where their density may drop because of water quality changing, what I would say is, again, we try and use what we've seen in other states that have had zebra mussels for a lot longer. And what I would say in certain cases, that has been the case, but not always. It's very system specific. So it's hard to have that crystal ball to see what zebra mussels would do in each specific water body, because they're all going to have different levels of nutrient inputs, for example, and that's going to affect the water quality or potentially even the density. So it's hard to say, just because at least some of the information in other states, it's been a little bit different in each case. And we're going to probably expect that within our waters as well. Now, as far as the second question, would we get to a point where outreach and education is the primary tool? I think that has always been our primary tool and will continue to be. Now, as far as inspections, one thing that we talked about with neighboring states and what they've done, or even Western states that are very heavy on inspections, in places that have zebra mussels, inspections haven't been basically the wall, if you will, to stop it. There are still new infestations that continue to happen. So we look at inspections as a tool in our toolbox, a way to reach users, have user contacts, potentially slow the spread. But again, they're not 100%, and there has not been a threshold established that says if you hit this many inspections, you will not have any new infestation. So I think outreach education has been our primary focus and will continue into the future just because of that.
Any additional questions? Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, thank you, Jake. In addition to Lake Sharp, have we done any other, you addressed that different water bodies might be affected differently. Like up in my area, Pickerel was one of the first ones. Do we have any lakes like Pickerel that we're also looking at the impacts of AIS with zebra mussels specifically?
Through the chair?
Yes, please.
Yes, Commissioner Whitmire, absolutely. I just wanted to pick one example that we had some information pulled together real quick from another presentation. But that being said, our staff, they're conducting those surveys. It may not be annual, depending on the water body, some around a 3 or 5 year rotation. Now, that being said, it's still going to be built into that long-term data set. And so we should have similar information to what I shared on all those different water bodies, and be more than happy to pull that together for you if you'd like to see.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Jake. I just, Sharp gets a lot of, replenishing of its water being on that Missouri system. So I just thought maybe some of those lakes that don't get quite so much in an influx and outflow may be affected differently. But thank you.
Commissioner Beast.
Commissioner Beast. Jake, look, now that there's zebra mussels in Pactola, are you watching like downstream, like at Canyon Lake, to see if they're making it down there? Or how far can the mussels travel down waterways? I've heard that they can't go up, but they will go down with the flow of water.
Through the chair?
Yes.
Yeah, Commissioner B, so what we would do typically on a downstream system, such as like Canyon Lake, periodically throughout the summer, we would check any hard structures in there, because there are docks kind of by the where they launch paddle boats and things from. And that's where we would look for a settler to attach to, or vegetation in there. And so we wouldn't do, what I would say is that periodically throughout the summer, we check those hard structures for the presence of zebra mussels. Now, one thing on Pactola with the deep water release, it's going to be something we need to look at to see if those veligers, those free floating juveniles, actually get down to the depths of that deep water release of Pactola. If they circulate in that water column, we tried to look into some similar reservoirs that have zebra mussels to see if they've essentially been entrained through the dam and spread downstream. And we really haven't been able to find something that's apples to apples comparison to Pactola. So we're not sure if that'll happen. But again, the best way that we will monitor it, which is similar to a lot of our other monitoring efforts, would be checking for the presence at that next standing water, which would be Canyon Lake. And for us, it would be hard structures, docks, fishing piers, or vegetation.
Any follow-up, Commissioner?
No.
Okay. Any other questions? Jake, one question. You have mentioned the citations and warnings that have been given this year. Do you know how that compares to last year at this time?
Madam Chair, I couldn't tell you what it compares to last year at this time, but what I can tell you is at the end of the season last year, I believe we only had, or I shouldn't say only, there were similar numbers. So we have written more citations, I'm guessing, this time than last year, because I believe the yearly totals last year were around 54 citations, somewhere in there, and 70-some warnings. So again, I couldn't tell you exactly. I could get that information, but we are at a point that I'm confident in there's more this year than last year.
Okay, no, that's good. Thank you. Any final comments or questions before we move on? Very good. Good report, Jake. Thank you very much.